Session number 28625, reel 14.
Okay, and so was that down to the south of England?
Yes, the night train, the south of England, across and onto the troop train and down to Celle. In Germany.
Okay, and the train that you went on to, when you said it was a troop train, was that only for troops?
Yes, it was a system they had, and each train was known by the area it went to by a particular colour. So you had a troop train that would go to Berlin, a troop train that would go south and predominantly east, as it were, to whichever area you were in. We wanted one of these.
Okay, and would these all be British troops who were going on?
Yes.
In? So was there quite a large force in Germany at that time?
Yes, there was.
Okay. Do you remember the colour of your, when you say this colour scheme?
No.
Okay then. Now you'd been in Germany 10 years before, I believe, hadn't you?
I'd been before, sorry?
You'd been in Germany about 10 years before?
No, never been as long as that.
No, you'd been there, sorry, in 1950, 10 years before?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And was this anywhere near where you'd been before, was Celle?
Quite near, yes, generally speaking, quite near.
Is it in the British sector of what?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And is it anywhere near the east-west border? Can you remember where it was near?
It wasn't too near. I do remember driving with my family one day for certainly 2.5 hours to get to the border, which you were allowed to do, to look at it, and it was up in the hills and the harsh mountains. No, we were never, unless you went on a specific patrol, you were never too near.
Okay. And how did you feel, or do you remember how you felt, when you were first told that you were going to Germany?
Nothing unusual. I mean, you were aware as a soldier that you'd be drafted and moved here, there, and anywhere and everywhere. And that's why I joined the army. Therefore, you had no strong feelings about anything other than an enthusiasm, a keenness to find out what the new place was like, what we had to do, and would you be able to have your family with you, all that sort of thing. And a contented man would be a contented soldier, and that's what we used to aim for all the time.
And can you describe to us what Celle is like, what type of place it is?
Beautiful town, market town, some beautiful architectural buildings. In fact, I went back. My daughter is in that area, my youngest daughter, who's married to a Highlander. I went into that area just last year and thoroughly enjoyed meandering through the beautiful streets, many of which were pedestrianised, but each building having the sort of date of it built or any sort of specific historic feature about it. But a nice area.
And was it old buildings in this town?
Yes, oh, very much so. Which had escaped most of the damage of the war time.
Okay.
If it hadn't, then it would be rebuilt as it was. And the Germans have a good system in that they keep drawings and maps and plans of all the buildings they made, and they were therefore able to reconstruct exactly what they had been like when they rebuilt.
And when you were there in 1960, had that all been done, or were they
No, they were still at it, progressing steadily.
And was there evidence of that, that you remember, you know?
In certain cases, yes, you're aware.
Okay. And do you remember, you know, or did you have an idea of what, like, the main employment in that area would have been, you know, with agriculture? Or?
There is a lot of agriculture there. I mean, it's flat. I've never seen so many huge potato fields, streets or roads lined with fruit trees. Masses of trees have been planted. Mostly agricultural, but you could see in the distance the sort of industrial side of life as you drove along the main autobahn. You can see all the smoky chimneys and huge buildings.
Okay. So where were the Gordon Highlanders based? Were they at the side of the town or were they in the centre of the town? Or?
It was a big town and they were on the fringe in a very old German barracks, trenchhead barracks. Very robust and very functional barracks.
Did you call that a trench house?
Trenchard, T-R-E-N-H-A-R-D.
Okay.
Trenchard barracks.
And describe that to us. What do you mean by that?
I have no idea. That's the name of it.
Okay.
And it obviously had been named that. Well, I don't know. By the Germans, by us.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking it was meaning something special.
Yeah.
So were these barracks, did it resemble in any way the Gordon barracks at Bridge Adon in Aberdeen?
Vastly different. They were huge blocks, all extremely well built, and they had cellars and they had attics, and each of these areas were utilised properly and functionally by the Germans. I mean, they were centrally heated then. You had double glazing, not as we realise now, but they had double windows that opened. They must have had them before 1939. To go into centrally heated double glazed buildings in the 1960s, whilst we had to wait many, many more years here to get that sort of thing. So it was very functional, and they were just beautiful, functional buildings which suited your need. And the rooms held six or four, two, and in some cases single men.
And was this old buildings? Were
yes. No idea of the date, no. Pre-war.
And how did you feel about being in a barracks that, you know, maybe in Germany, that had been used by the German army in the Second World War? Did you ever think of that while you were there?
No, you just knew that everything was extremely functional. They obviously were preparing long before we had, and I mean the roads were all designed to be anti-tank as such, in that tanks could career along them and that damaged them, and they grew their trees on either side, so eventually the trees met and they became like tunnels so that the tank movements, the troop movements could be seen from the air, but all geared like that, as a pattern and a plan for war.
So did you feel that you had quite a lot of respect for this?
You had to admire what they had done, what they were about, and you did. And then you went down to, we were quite near Belsen camp, so that was an essential visit by any human being. And having been there and witnessed how many people had died there, and the fact that that particular time trees didn't grow, heather didn't grow, you didn't hear or see birds and things like that. But you're seeing the other side of the principles and policies.
And when you visited Belsen, was that like as part of your army duties or was that with your family?
I took my family there. you could organise young soldiers to go and see it. People were encouraged to do so. It was a very good, well, it has improved over the years, and they now have a lovely pictorial entrance depicting, you know, the story of it. And it's strange to see German troops going in bunches to see the presentation and to witness and be aware of the history of the place.
Okay. And when you first arrived there as well, were you in standard accommodation, or did you immediately get family accommodation?
No, I didn't. You had to have a minimum of 6 months in the station before you qualified. I just made it, and I got a flat in another barracks about 20 minutes away. So I was very lucky and happy to meet my wife at the Hanover station and take her into her new abode.
And, you know, you've described the barracks. This accommodation that you got, was it still of a high standard?
Yes. It was centrally heated, with 3 bedrooms and sitting room, dining room, cellar. There were 6 people in each block, 6 families. And a nice area too.
And were there other Gordon Highlanders there that were...
The odd one, yes. Mm-hmm. It was a mixture of people.
And did it not make it difficult, you know, communicating or commuting between...
No, I had a car, but there was transport laid on for those who didn't. And there was only perhaps half a dozen of us using the empty quarters of this other little ordnance depot.
Okay. Well, so there were this other depot that you were at, was it actually empty, or was that?
No, that was a fully operational ordnance depot with empty houses. The army's principle was to occupy them. Yeah.
Okay, and we've spoken about your children before, and so by 1960, were they at school age or anything?
Yes, and they all went to school in Germany, except the youngest one at that particular time. I too at school, and the other one at nursery school.
And was that like a German school they went to, or
no, a British school.
And was that within the confines of the barracks or something?
No, they had to move to nearer where the unit was. But again, they had buses that would daily collect and deliver in the town.
Okay. And when you mentioned, you know, the 6 month qualifying period before you got accommodation, were you there actually the 6 months, or you said that you just managed?
I had 6 months to do, therefore I qualified in that.
Okay, so you still had to share the accommodation in the cellar barracks, did you?
No, I joined my wife. When my wife arrived, we then all together as a family went to the house.
Mm-hmm. But before that, did you do 6 months in the barracks?
About a month, yes. But because I had 6 months to spare, I was able to apply for the house and get the house. Then the family moved. And
Sorry, I was thinking you had to be there 6 months.
No.
So did you know when you were going out there how long approximately you would be there?
Yes, because we knew that we were going off to Kenya.
Okay. And so whilst you were in Germany as well. Sorry, I've forgotten that bit. But whilst you were in Germany, what actually were the British Army doing there? Was it like peacekeeping duties, or, you know, what were you actually doing all the time?
In theory, we were preparing for any possible invasion from the West. So you train, as we did, in normal sort of soldierly training We were in wheeled armoured vehicles at that particular time, and the 20th Hussars, they drove the vehicles and we manned them. So you prepared for the defence of war, which all soldiers do. And it was just a continuance of it, doing exercises here and there and everywhere, continuing to do your training of your NCOs and cadres and things, drivers, signals, troops, all of that sort of thing. Just a change geographically, but a continuance in the curriculum of training.
Okay, so you didn't actually have to go out and maybe with an armoured vehicle and maybe have to go through certain streets or anything, did you?
No, nothing of that nature. You did lots of things notionally. You had to imagine what it would be like, but you were prepared and you were trained for that.
Okay, so the Cold War would have been on by then, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, it continued.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think, at that time, did you think there was actually a real threat? Was the feeling in the army that something was going to happen at some point?
I suppose one over the period of years you could feel that, but generally speaking, no.
Okay, and when you said that you did these exercises, how long would an average exercise last for? Would it be like a day or a week or longer?
It would start at a day, to 3 days, to 5 days, to 1 week, to 2 weeks, to 3 weeks. And you'd have set big exercises which would include the whole of the British Army of the Rhine or the whole of your division in a realistic rehearsal, as it were, of where you'd go to and what you'd do if, in fact, the Russian did come.
Okay. So did you have plans that you had to work to?
Always, yes. And it was always controlled and directed by and coordinated within, and yes, very realistic.
And would you know when you were going on exercise?
Generally speaking, they had a broad outline, and they had certain fixtures. Obviously, if the whole of the army is going to be interrupted in the German system, the Germans must be made aware of the fact that we would need the trains and the use of the roads and all of that sort of thing. So certain exercises were annual ones, or perennial really, and the others would lead up to it.
And so this was big exercises then, was it? It wasn't just just a few if you're going out with a tank.
You would progress from the section responsibility up to platoon, to company, to battalions, to brigades, to the division, and it could be quite involved and quite thorough.
And how did you feel that the normal German citizen felt about maybe the likes of the army taking over their trains, for example, or their roads? Did you think there was any bad feeling or anything about this?
I would say in some cases, yes. Just as you get anywhere in the world, if you're inconvenient, you look for the first and easy excuse. But lots of people depended upon us and the income that they obtained from our presence. Let's not forget that the German, part of their life, part of their curriculum, throughout history has been movement west or east or south, and the public found it just normal, really, in a sense.
So, apart from on exercise, did the citizens near where the barracks were, did they accept the army okay?
You had to concentrate on your hearts and minds and And we had a pipe band and a military band, and they would all be very, very much involved in concerts here, there, and everywhere. And we had two extremely good bands that were very popular in that sense. And I remember we invited some 2,000 Germans into camp to sample haggis, for example. That was done extremely well. So, yes. It depends. If you put something in, you get something out.
And when you said you invited 2,000 in, was the camp quite a big camp that you could take?
Yeah. Well, I'm now moving on years after. But yes, the camp's big enough, and you had a big enough kitchen, which normally fed 350 people, and by utilisation of stalls and tents and whatever. You always had a big square so that you could put people in, and you had different messes, so that's a problem. Each and every venture was a challenge, a fresh challenge, and we never failed.
Okay. So in 1960, do you still think that the army or the Gordon Highlanders was still trying to get the citizens on their side, if you like? It was a win hearts and minds?
Yes, I mean, whatever they did, they would have a good public relations team. And if you ever had concerts or beaten of retreats within the camp, you'd always have a selection of the local dignitaries who would appear. And for instance, again, moving many years on, we got the freedom of the Charlottenburg district in Berlin. That's an example of how they respected what we had done. We made presentations throughout the years just as they did.
Okay. We're still discussing Germany, and I was wondering as well about the language. Had you learned German to work across in Germany?
It was advantageous if you did speak the language. There's no doubt about it that you get on far, far better if you're able to engage in conversation with the Germans. The Germans, like most people in the world, speak good English, and more of them. We, by nature, I don't know, are basically lazy. But it is good, and I think it's common courtesy to learn the language and be able to speak it wherever you go. And I even find it now visiting my youngest daughter, and I say to her family, well, learn a word a day and appreciate what it's about. But if you, lots of the soldiers did speak bits of it. Some were extremely good, and others just learned sufficient to get past.
And did you learn some? Did you?
Oh, I don't think it has increased my awareness of it. I never stuck. And if you could remember your basic courtesies in life, people realize that you are trying. And for example, I remember travelling to our son, who was a nappy in those days, and we went to their shop to ask for cords to hang the Christmas cards in, and having went in and introduced myself in German and asked had he got something, the man waited until I'd finished, and then he turned and said in lovely English, this is what you want? And I said, yes, of course, that's it. But he was an Englishman married to a German. In the same period, my wife and my son's mother-in-law went to a German bakery, beautiful bakery as they are, and there was an old dear, similar sort of age, who couldn't speak English, and the two girls could speak German. But they laughed and they giggled, and by gesticulation, etc., they got what they wanted, and everybody left. Smiling. So they're, you know, always aware of being patient and determined and courteous.
And did you have quite a lot to do with the German population? Did the army, you know, like on an everyday basis, would there have been Germans coming onto the base, and would you have been going out to the town much?
I wouldn't have gone to town much, no. Seldom, actually. At the weekend, you'd tour with your family and see as much as you possibly could, and that would do it. You had various people who worked at the camp, who were residents, who had units coming and going, as it were, but they would stay on, the electricians, the painters, the girls who worked in the kitchen or the nursery and things like that. So you got to know them and accept and acknowledge what they were doing. So yes, I never found an unpleasant period at any time.
It was more the language I was thinking of, you know, you know, how much would you have to know to get by?
Well, as I say, I can just think of one, when I occupied this house and the flat that I've just spoken about, when I went home at night, I would go past this little village with a lovely baker's shop, and I remember initially thinking that I would bid good day to them, and then I would ask them for fear, butch and bitter. And all of this I rehearsed in my mind. I'd go into the shop, bid them good day, and there was these lovely, beautiful girls in their pristine costumes on and aprons and whatever, and they would acknowledge my good intention. But then when I tried my best, simple sort of German, the girls would return and say, yes, you want 5 buns. So really, you know, the majority of people did speak English, which maybe was the deterrent to us not engaging hard enough. But you still try.
Okay. And did the army give any German lessons?
Yes, you could. You could get that, and you could go on courses and do it seriously.
But it wasn't compulsory?
No. Okay. No, you didn't have the time, really, to many other things to do.
Okay. And in 1960 as well, I'm thinking of Britain, you know, supermarkets really hadn't come in then. How did your wife manage to shop, you know, across there?
We had a nappy. Every area had a very well-stocked nappy, which would produce anything that you wanted within reason. We do have idiosyncrasies in life, and obviously you'd get some old dear looking for something that nobody else wanted. But within reason, the nappy would provide whatever you wanted or needed to survive.
And you were a colour sergeant at this point, were you?
Uh-huh.
Now, was your job still the same as what it had been in Aberdeen?
In a sense that I was responsible for the accommodation and the welfare and the general administration of the men. Anything to do with the requirements of, you know, you feed them when you went out in the field and look after the equipment. Yes. Anything to do with the individual's requirement for equipment and queue things.
Now, did this become more difficult in Germany than it had been in Aberdeen?
Not really. It's basically the same throughout. You read into the situation and